everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. As always, this is Nick Wright. Great weekend of football to pass your way. Dak Prescott and the Cowboys back on the right track. A controversial call may have cost Aaron Rodgers a win, but we will kick off the show this morning with one Tom Brady would very much like back as the Jaguars hosted the Patriots. Let's get it going, guys. In the rematch of last year's AFC title game where Tom Brady outdueled Blake Bortles, this time around, quite the opposite, as the Jags did not hold back, and it was Bortles who bested Brady. Bortles threw for four touchdowns, 377 yards in Jacksonville's 31-20 win over New England. Brady had 234 yards and two touchdowns in the loss. Here he is after the game.
Everyone needs to do a better job. I mean, that was not certainly our best effort. You know, I give them a lot of credit. They played good. They make it tough on you on our offense, their defense. And we just could never string enough plays together.
That seemed to be the case, as you kept wanting them to get it going, jumpstart that offense. C, what do you think was the biggest key in the Patriots' loss on Sunday?
Well, even with their offense struggling, which sometime you're going to do against a top-five defense, we know Jacksonville is going to be a top-five defense, but what you don't expect is, and based on the game plan that New England had, they were expecting to get some help from the Jags. They thought the Jags and... Because he's gotten a lot of criticism that they were going to try to protect Blake Bortles in this. That's the reason why they had 7-8-man fronts. Man, they had zero coverage. They did some things that I haven't seen New England do that consistently for a long, long time. You would have thought in this game that they were down at the beginning and trying to get the ball back and try to be more aggressive. They had eight people in the box, man-to-man on the outside. So Jacksonville, what did they do? The most impressive thing, how they threw the ball on first down. Blake Bortles, 13 of 19 on first down.
Wow.
And not only just those numbers, but it was the theme of the game. They got off to an early lead, but the drive before halftime, they were almost in the same situation they were in the championship game, but the coaching staff said, no, we're going to be aggressive. And then that continued in the second half with Brady an opportunity to get the ball back. You could see the Jags continue on first down, trust their quarterback compared to trying to protect their quarterback. There's a lot of, other subplots in the game. But for me, in moving forward, that would have to be the biggest thing. Jacksonville and having confidence in their quarterback and him distributing the ball and guys making plays.
The Jags out-patrioted the Patriots in this game. What you talked about right before halftime, what's been the staple of the Belichick era Pats? Score before the half, get the ball back, score after half. That is exactly what Jacksonville did to reel off 10 straight points. Blake Bortles, the stats CeCe mentioned are unbelievable. I mean, to average nearly 8 yards per play on first down, not going to lose a lot of football games that way.
Yes.
But they stayed aggressive even in the waning moments. Up 11 with less than 3 minutes remaining. I would not have criticized them at all in that spot if they said run, punt.
Yes.
We're up two scores.
That's different the NFL story. Book.
Right.
If you're two up, scores, two, that's what you got to do.
You're playing the clock at that point. And even then they said, we trust you, Blake. We're not going to lose this game the way we lost the AFC Championship game because we only trusted you for a half. And we're not even going to lose it because we only trust you for 3.5 quarters. Bortles was the story of the game because the Pats' clear game plan was see what he can do. And what he did was, to me, I don't think it's over the top to call it. It's the best football game given the opponent. I've seen Blake Bortles play as a pro, and people need to adjust their eyes to see, recognize what they saw yesterday. The Pats were down double digits after the first quarter and never got it within single digits from that point forward. That's happened to Tom Brady 3 times in his career. 0-4 against the Steelers, 0-9 against the Ravens, and yesterday against the Jags. The reason I bring that up, in that early 2000s part of the Patriots era, the team that could give them trouble along with Indy was the Steelers. In the late 2000s, it was the Ravens. And now the Jags, the only 3 teams to get a double-digit lead on Brady and keep it the whole game, they're now on that list. It was a dominant performance from a Jags team that I thought was going to be outclassed on Sunday.
Clearly, the outcome surprised a lot of people. The other thing that I think surprised people was Rob Gronkowski and what he wasn't able to do yesterday. I think he finished with a 15 yards or something. We talked all week about whether it was going to be a Jalen Ramsey-Rob Gronkowski matchup and whether he'd be able to slow or even stop him. How were they able to contain Gronk?
Well, they had a good game plan. I think that the defensive staff of the Jags didn't get caught up in the who Jalen is. What he got caught up in is who are we as a Jags defense? Because they don't go out there and talk trash. They don't go out there and say a whole bunch of stuff. They don't get personal fouls. They just have one player that Jalen, in the GQ article, and I guess he's trying to raise his profile, so that's what we might see moving forward. He said, we're going to play to our strength. We're going to play a lot of man-to-man coverage. We're going to send a lot of people at Gronk, but we're not going to go out of our way and have Jalen travel with him so they can potentially pick him. We're going to concentrate on the whole offense, and we're going to slow him down. But ultimately, we're going to put pressure on Brady that he's not going to have a whole bunch of time to be able to sit back there to be able to pick it apart. So I thought the staff of Jacksonville, offensively and defensively, they put this team, which is a very, very good roster, in a position where they could be successful in their game planning.
And while they didn't allow it to become Ramsey v. Gronk, hardly at all, not even in the red zone like Bart Scott talked about they might. I mean, they really played a true game plan absent of the egos to it. What they did do, which Houston was not able to do the week before against the Patriots, is say to the Pats, we will not let Gronk beat us. Again, it's kind of the Patriots thing. What do you do best? We want to take it away. We won't let Gronk beat us. Let's see what Jacob Hollister can do. Let's see what James White can do. Let's see what Philip Dorsett can do. And the Texans couldn't do it the week before. Gronk dominated that game for the Patriots and led them to the victory. This week, without Gronk, you all of a sudden saw a Pats team, oh, this is where they're missing Edelman. Mm-hmm. This is where they miss Brandon Cooks.
Yep.
This is where maybe they miss Deion Lewis. And I brought up the Texans game a couple times just because we talked after week one. We don't know what week one games, who they mean more about. Do they mean more about the team that won, the team that lost? After you saw how Houston played this week against a Blaine Gabbert-led Titans team, you start even to look at the Patriots in week one and that victory a little bit differently. And you see the Jags, who really, both sides of the ball, had an excellent game plan and executed it as well as you could have hoped for them.
Nick mentioned the wide receivers. Is there anything that stuck out for you that actually concerns you about this Patriots team after what you saw, or was this just a loss and they move on from it?
It's just a loss. You have to spread it around. The Jags were able to take advantage of the offensive line. You know, they were not dominant. If you look at running the ball, the Patriots' longest game was 15 yards. Passing the ball, longest game, 29 yards. So we can sit there and blame it on the wide receivers, but we don't expect them to be spectacular. No, that's who Tom Brady has. That's the people. Now, we give them credit when they do well against the Texans. Oh, they spread the ball out. Philip Dorsett had a career high in catches. No, this is who they are. They miss Edelman because with Gronk being limited, and they didn't get the ball to the running backs out of the backfield as much. But you have to give Jacksonville credit. The outside wide receivers for New England were not a threat against this Jags D.
And while it doesn't show up in the box score because the Jags, I think, just had a couple sacks and three other quarterback hurries, to Chris's point about the offensive line, that those numbers are where they are because Brady's so good at getting it out quickly, but he was under duress. They were collapsing the pocket quickly, and so some of those offensive line questions we had for the Pats coming into the season, their great offensive line coach Dante Scarnecchia notwithstanding, those you started to see, oh, okay, that's why there was a level of concern at their left tackle position. That's why there was a level of concern. Now, most teams don't have Jacksonville's front and Calais Campbell out there dominating people, but you saw a lot of the things that we were like, about the Patriots rear their head in this week. Now, with that said, they get Detroit and Miami and then Edelman's back, so at least on the receiving core, some of it will be better a couple weeks from now.
All right, the Jacksonville Jaguars are 2-0 as they beat the Patriots in week two. We'll talk much more about that coming up. But on the other side, how was Dak Prescott able to right the ship with a win over the New York Giants? Next on First Things First. We're going to get to Dak and the Cowboys in a minute, but first, Jaguars wide receiver Keelan Cole makes an unbelievable one-handed catch. Watch it again.
I mean, this
rampant is rampant in the NFL.
See, That is.
Oh, that's the best one of the year.
Yeah.
That's the best one of the year. I mean, that's OBJ going down the sideline. OBJ's now, the ball's traveling a lot further, so the velocity of the ball is harder. But that was nice. And then went on to have a great game.
Absolutely. I mean, I laughed at the idea that he could be your number one receiver. He looked like it yesterday. Credit to him.
All right, Vikings, Packers, Kirk Cousins to Adam Thielen, 22 yards. Look at that.
It's not 80 million, but that's right. They brought him there.
It is.
Cover two.
Look at that.
He's got a guy around his legs. He can't even step into the throw and is able to get it there. If you think the Vikings aren't a lot better with Cuz, no. That's the only reason why they could come
and
back.
And the two-point conversion throw was one of the he made some great throws. I don't know how the safety didn't get there. That was spectacular.
All right, finally here, North Texas kick returner Keegan Brewer
so much.
Pulls off the fake fair catch against Arkansas.
Run!
Then goes 90 yards for the score.
I love it so much, see? He never waved his hand. What did
he did wave his hand.
Oh, I mean.
Watch his hand. Watch his left hand. Watch his left hand.
It doesn't get above his shoulder.
Now, what I'm concerned about is next week. You see that little wave?
Yeah.
That's why I thought.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm concerned about next week, a guy, does he fair catch? And then a guy
and
takes a cheap shot on him, you know, but he waved his hand.
He waved his hand, but he didn't get above the shoulder, and so the refs let it go. That was great.
Yeah.
That was great.
All right, let's move on to the Cowboys and Giants Sunday Night Football. Dak Prescott and the boys called out by Big Blue earlier in the week, to which Dak said, challenge accepted, and it was, for the most part. Sure, Dak threw for just 160 yards. Zeke added 78 yards and a touchdown on the ground, but it was the defense which came up big as Dallas gets their first win on the year, 20-13 victory over the New York Giants. Here is Dak Prescott after the game.
I wasn't the only one who accepted that challenge. This team accepted it. That offense accepted it, and we wanted to go out there and just show these guys.
Yeah, they just outplayed us. Plain and simple. You know, they came out, and they beat us.
Obviously, guys are disappointed, and some guys are going to be, you know, frustrated, as we should, but we can't let that affect our preparation or practices. So we gotta bounce back and come back, be on the road again next week and face a good Houston team. So nothing's gonna get fixed, you know, by itself or complaining. It's about stepping up and making a difference and fixing things.
You know, Nick, we had real concerns about this Cowboys team, from the quarterback to their hobbled line, across the board, their receivers. Did what you saw last night ease any of those concerns for this team?
Any concerns, yes, it eased some of them. All far from it. Like, listen, what the Cowboys should feel best about right now is they appear to have a legitimate top 10 defense that has in back-to-back weeks done very well for four full quarters, holding the Panthers to 16. The Giants got 13, but kind of just barely. Like, they were in single digits for the vast majority of the game, down multiple scores for the vast majority of the game. That field goal at the end gets them to 13. Like, the defense looks excellent. And Zeke started to, in my eyes, look more like Zeke more. But, again, 15 carries, 17 carries. He hasn't had the big attempts game. But yesterday's game didn't ease any of my concerns about Dak. 160 yards passing when 64 comes on one play. Like, this is a guy who, after those first two drives, was...
Do that Bart Scott math and tell me how many...
It's 15 of 24 for 96 yards.
Right, but after that 64-yard completion, how many yards did he have the rest of the game?
That's what I'm saying. Other than the Tavon Austin, he's 15 of 24 for 96 yards.
Oh, okay.
That's exactly 4 yards per attempt. Like, so I don't... It was very funny. My wife showed me this weekend from 1 year ago this past Friday an argument from a year ago that day, September 13th, whatever that was, talking about Dak Prescott. It was you, me, you, and Greg Jennings is there, except our seats are flipped. And Chris is adamant. Chris is, I'm telling you guys, he's a game manager. The idea that he could do what he did his rookie year in any system is absurd. And you were pointing your finger, you were fired up. And I texted Chris the video, and I said, I think you might have been correct on this argument. Like, I didn't see last night. I'm like, oh, rookie year, Dak's back. No, I saw a Cowboys team that took advantage of a Giants team that's in huge trouble.
Yes.
Got out to an early lead. Eli had no time, and the defense played great. And Dak didn't make any mistakes, but That wasn't, to me, a great quarterbacking performance by number four for the Dallas Cowboys.
You guys remember the Baltimore Ravens when they had Jamal Lewis?
Yeah.
And, not the 2,000-yard season, but just an offense was down. He was the focal point.
Jonathan Ogden, a right tackle.
They had a quarterback who managed the game, and they had a top-five defense. Dallas has a chance to be in that because they got very good personnel. Rod Marinelli is doing a tremendous job as far as the scheme, getting guys in position to make a play. The only problem with Dallas is people don't want them to be a dominant defensive team. It's not sexy. Like, they want the high-flying, scoring. No, they're not going to be that. So if you change how you look at them and their scope and you say, well, what if that was Jacksonville who won a game like that last night? You'd be happy. You'd be like, wow, yeah, that's how Jacksonville wins games. But if they start off the game with the theme that we're going to choke teams out, we're going to be a defensive-oriented team, get after the quarterback, force turnovers, hold the other team down in check, and our quarterback's going to manage it, we'll get a little bit ahead in the passing game, and then later on we'll run the ball to eat up the clock, yeah, then this is a great game. But I just don't think Dallas and their fan base is willing to say, you know, no, we're an offensive-driven team. We got the star on our helmet. We're going to be a little bit sexier than what we are. But, man, Dak's a game manager, and there's nothing wrong with that. But after that big play, that's the Dallas offense that we're starting to get used to seeing. We saw it in four quarters in Carolina. We saw it for three quarters in this game. So in seven quarters of football out of eight, they just have not been able to effectively throw the football.
And that was, by the way, without the Giants getting an effective pass rush. Also, like, it's not like Dak was constantly under duress. And it's not like, I don't feel the Giants have shut down corners. I mean, Jack Rabbit got burnt by Tavon Austin. Yeah. But they, and Landon Collins is an excellent safety. But I don't look at the Cowboys as, I think on their defense, their weakest part is, I'm sorry, I got my the Giants, pardon me, the weakest part of their defense is their secondary compared to their front. And you still couldn't get an effective passing game going. So I don't think you solved anything there.
Okay, so let's turn and sort of see what the Dallas Cowboys were up against. This Giants offense was supposed to be, you know, putting out there all these new weapons they have. We were finally going to see Saquon Barkley run. We were going to see what Odell can do. And it just felt like they just stalled across the board and weren't able to get anything done. How concerned were you with this Giants offense, C?
I'm not concerned at all because I told Nick. That's going to be my thing. I told Nick. That offensive line, regardless of the money they spend on Nate Solder, this is not a good offensive line. They're not going to be a good offensive line. It's going to be hard to run the ball. Like, you can be a good running back, but you can't run when you can't find a hole. If you look at the other, Todd Gurley, the one year he had an off year was when that offensive line there for the Rams was not very, very good. People talk about L. Bell, what he does in Pittsburgh. It's their scheme, but also their offensive line. They provide holes. Zeke there in Dallas, they provide holes. You need to be able to get the running back to the second level. You need to get him through the line of scrimmage. And with the Giants, too many free runners in the backfield, too many guys you have to avoid before you get back to the line of scrimmage. So, no, I'm not surprised at all. They'll be able to throw the ball some, but this offensive line, Eli's going to take a pounding this year because this offensive line is not going to be good. I'm not overreacting. I didn't think they were going to be good, and I knew the money they threw at their left tackle would not be able to cure all the woes that they have.
Well, they got a double problem, which is, one, the left tackle is not performing to the level they had hoped and that they're paying for, but the other one is the left guard, that Will Hernandez, the guy they draft in the top of the second round, is playing like a rookie interior offensive lineman who is struggling mightily. That's not even to mention Eric Flowers. But if the problem is the offensive line is too bad for them to be able to even get into what they want to do offensively, then you can't look at what they did this offseason as the right course of action through the draft. If the fact of the matter is the offensive line is so bad, the number two overall pick running back can't get going, then you can't take the number two overall pick running back. If the offensive line is so bad.
But you also have the draft capital and real capital. You throw the money at Nate Solder. You bring him in. You move Flowers over to his natural position, right tackle. So you already have a lot of money and resources already committed to that offensive line. That doesn't mean it's going to work out. Like, we can can wait every game that the Giants aren't successful. We could easily say, they should have drafted a quarterback. The Giants were going to be rebuilding that offensive line, and you can't replace one player and be able to do that, Nate Solder. Hernandez, what did he do well in college? He was an in-the-box, nasty type of guy. What type of game plan are they giving them where he can take advantage of the tools that he has? So it takes a long time, and it takes multiple players on the offensive line to repair how bad that offensive line was.
Sure, see, but when I say the offseason, I'm not just talking about Saquon in the draft. What I'm saying is in the offseason, to your point, your theme, right, I told you. You said this is not going to fix their offensive line. They operated the entire offseason like they thought that was shored up. We are going to compete right now. That is part of moving Flowers over. That is part of signing a guy that you thought from the moment it happened was overpaid. It's their job to, at the baseline, have the knowledge that you do when they're making their free agency decisions. Like yesterday, the Giants, I mean, Saquon had 14 catches for 80 yards. That's the fewest in NFL history. How long they've been playing, CC?
99 years.
No one has ever had that many catches for that few yards. To have that those type of dynamic playmakers, and I don't know if this is on the offensive coordinator, if it's on Pat Shurmur, but to have Saquon and Odell and an athletic
but
tight end.
But is it not on Eli? We've talked about the line a lot. How much of that do you put on Eli Manning?
He's not blocking them. I mean, Eli was running for his life. Like, if this wasn't a divisional game, if they had sacked him one more time, I would have thrown in the towel. Like, what's Eli supposed to do? Like, how good was Eli supposed to be in that game?
I'm one of the most, I mean, I'm an Eli critic at this point in his career. I can't put yesterday on him. Yesterday, the reason he was checking down every time is because he didn't have time. He missed Odell once on a double move to the end zone. But aside from that, like, I didn't see, week one, Eli missed guys. We saw him missing guys when he did have time. I didn't see that yesterday. Yesterday, I did see him under constant duress, and then they were not able to scheme their playmakers open. So, I'm not hesitant to criticize Eli. Yesterday, I don't think is on him.
All right, this was the Cowboys over the Giants. We will talk much more about this. But on the other side, Patrick Mahomes looking unstoppable in his first 2 weeks of play. That's next on First Things First. All right, time now for stories to start your morning. One of the more bizarre NFL stories. Bills cornerback Vontae Davis retired at halftime of the game against the Chargers. Literally just walked away from the game during the game. He later put out a statement saying, "I shouldn't be out there anymore." Nick, what was your reaction to this?
My reaction was to call Chris Carter. Chris Carter, what were some of the questions you were asking me at halftime of this game, or when we found out about what he was doing at halftime?
Oh, he decided to do it before the teammates. When they went out for the third quarter, he stayed in there. He wasn't going to wait around. Like, he wasn't going to be like, "Hey, man, it's been good playing with you guys," after the game.
Exactly.
Oh, no, because they would have whooped him. They would have beat him. That's not your normal office space where someone just decides to quit. I've never seen anything like this.
He said to me, did he use their soap after he decided to retire?
Yeah, what did about he freshen that? Up? Absolutely. Did he use the hot water? Like, you already quit. Like, why are you trying to use the facilities?
Vontae Davis,
security guard. Don't walk him to his car.
Three quarters of Nate Peterman, three quarters of Nate Allen. He said, "I'm done with football forever. Can't do it."
Sam Darnold came back down to earth in week two. That's where the rest of us live. Darnold threw for 334 yards, a touchdown, and two picks, including one in the end zone, in a loss to the Miami Dolphins. Nick, your thoughts on Darnold in week two?
Get used to this part of his game, Jets fans. It was excellent week one, came back from the turnover, but a guy who had 20-plus turnovers his last year at USC is not going to magically fix that his first year in the NFL, especially starting from game one. This doesn't shake my faith that he can be a high-level quarterback in this league, but you're going to have days like this where Darnold's turnovers cost you your best chance to win.
Yeah, it doesn't kill my confidence in him. You're going to have plenty of days like this. Also, we might look back in November and December and be like, the Miami Dolphins are a better football team than I expected. I called their game last week against the Titans. I believe they're one of those four or five teams that will be much improved in 2018. So a combination of rookie going against a team I believe to be improved.
All right, moving on. Andrew Luck got his first win of the season, threw for two touchdowns and two picks in a 21-9 win over Washington. See, what did you make of Andrew Luck's performance?
This is what we want to see. We want to see Andrew out there. You can't throw the two picks. One got batted and everything, because they're not just going to be able to overcome it. But he's going to be one of the best quarterbacks that we have in the league. He's still got some rust, so I wouldn't be surprised if he just struggled a little bit early. But winning, getting your team on the winning bus. Last week came up a little bit short going against Cincinnati. Was able to get – that's a big win for him. He's been out of football a long time.
Right, it's a big win for him. It's a big win for the Colts. Also, the Washington, we made their week one dominating win against Arizona. More about them. After you see Arizona, it looks like maybe that was more about Arizona. Speaking of Washington, Adrian Peterson, I think he had 11 carries for 21 yards. That's surprising. But luck, I'm glad he got through another game healthy. The picks were bad, but they won by double digits.
Brutal, brutal loss for the Browns. Zane Gonzalez missed two extra points and two field goals, including one to tie it at the end of regulation. The Browns are now winless in 19 straight games. Sorry, Hugh. Nick, how tough a loss was this?
I mean, only the Browns could get a 4th and 5, down 6, 45-yard touchdown strike with a minute left and lose in regulation. That seems like a riddle. And they had chance after chance. Zane Gonzalez he'll get cut, I assume, today. And I don't know who's going to pick him up. I felt terribly for the guy, but that's what happens. They had every opportunity to beat New Orleans and couldn't make a kick.
Why do you feel bad for him?
I always feel bad when people lose their job, man. Especially guys that I don't think are going to get that job back. I always feel badly. I understand your feelings are your problem. That's a Chris Carter motto. I have a little more empathy, but I've also never
Tough
lost a game.
He should have retired. He should have retired after the game. Give him a ride back to Cleveland, and then that's it. He's got one job to do. That's the kick. Forget about the field goals. What about the extra points?
The extra points.
Did they open up the dome in New Orleans? No, they didn't. Indoors. No, he's done. You got to get rid of him. Look at their Saturday. They cut their wide receiver, Josh Gordon, before they get on the plane. The team was shocked by this. They go down there, play well enough to win the game, the second week in a row against two playoff teams, and they come away what?
0-1.
Without any wins.
Yeah.
No wins.
But Gonzalez got to go.
Finally,
I don't feel bad.
The Rams got a dominant win over the Cardinals yesterday. Todd Gurley scored 3 times while the defense pitched a shutout in a 34-0 rout. See, does it look like the Rams are the best team in the NFL, or is it their competition?
Right now, the Rams are they're the team I wouldn't want to face. If it was a single elimination, I wouldn't want to face them because I believe it's harder to get ready for them. I believe they have less weaknesses than other teams. When you can score points the way they can score points by not going to one person, it makes it complicated. So you put pressure on that defense already. You put pressure on the opposing offense you can't turn the ball over, and you have to be able to make big plays. The Rams are who we thought they were going to be. They're an exciting football team. Their quarterback is getting better. They can throw the ball. They can run it. They got a good offensive line. Their one weakness is just perimeter pass rushers. They don't have an elite pass rusher. They got good players, but just not great ones. They got great ones on the inside, but can they get a constant pass rush from the outside? That's the only question mark that I see on this football team.
This is in the second straight game. Jared Goff has looked like year two Jared Goff, and I've been saying it. If he plays at that level, yeah, this is the best team in the NFL. Like, they have aside from that exterior pass rush, it's a good point by CC, but they have – I mean, they have – A to A-plus players at so many. They have an A-plus running back, an A wide receiver in Cooks, good complementary receivers in Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods. They have an A and an A-minus corner in Peters and Aqib Talib, an A-plus lineman in Aaron Donald. Andrew Whitworth was an All-Pro last year. That's their left tackle. Like you, and I think excellent schematic advantages going into
Wade Phillips.
Wade Phillips on defense and Sean McVay on offense.
You would think that someone couldn't match Sean McVay because what he's doing offensively. Now, I believe he's really, really special. People are giving him a lot of attention and everything for his memory, but your memory's no good if you don't have the type of talent that you can orchestrate the way he's doing. The play-action pass, the creativity, and Brandon Cook added to this offense. Oh, it's amazing how much better he is
than
Sammy Watkins. Oh, and how they're taking advantage of where he was in New England. It's as if McVay talked to Josh McDaniels and said, I'm going to pick up right where he was. When he was starting to get hot, If he doesn't get knocked out of the Super Bowl, I believe New England wins it. And the way he played the last eight games of the season, pick right up there in Los Angeles there with the Rams.
And what was the only question mark about this Rams team was how their personalities were going to mesh and if they were able to and if Wade Phillips can control everybody. And so far, it's been quiet, seemingly.
Listen, if they're winning, that's not going to be a problem at all.
But like, it hasn't been, regardless. We haven't heard any rumblings or anything from
Give me the most talented players. People talk about, what about locker room chemistry? Man, give me good. We'll work it out.
You think the Chiefs, who I know we're about to talk about, would want Marcus Peters back, given what their defense looking like? And by the way, one other note from this game, Josh Rosen might be the next rookie quarterback to get a start soon. Sam Bradford looks, he looked as bad as you can look in the NFL game yesterday, and their season seems to be getting away from them already. So my guess is this week they'll talk about Josh Rosen starting soon.
He's probably just stressed about last year's bone bruise, so he might take himself out. Hey, let's talk Chiefs and Steelers. Kansas City was looking for their first win in Pittsburgh in 30 years. Patrick Mahomes was going to need to play a near-perfect game in order for that to happen. And he did. Six touchdown passes. He's now got 10 in two games. That's an NFL record as the Chiefs beat the Steelers on the road. Mahomes throwing more touchdown passes than incompletions yesterday. Not bad for a quarterback in his third NFL start. Here he is after the game.
You never expected to have 10 touchdowns at this point in the season, but I knew with this offense and the weapons that we had and the scheme Coach Reed's drawing up that we had a chance to be really, really good and that the possibilities are, they're endless. I mean, we could really come out every single week and score points. It's all about me getting the ball into those playmakers' hands, and you saw it today. They're breaking tackles and scoring points.
CeCe, talk to me a little bit about Patrick Mahomes. How much of it was the adrenaline and being there and playing the Steelers, and how much of it was, hey, he's a really good guy who's going to make some mistakes. He just hasn't made that many in the first 2 weeks.
It's all skill. It has nothing to do with adrenaline. It's all skill.
Yeah.
Randy Reid has put him in position, even from a confidence standpoint, because it's one thing to say a guy has a big arm, but then how do I call the game? We've got 60 plays, 65 plays. Do I dial up 40 runs? Because that's what he said about McNabb early in his career. McNabb is talented, probably one of the most talented throwers I've ever had. But earlier in the game plans, though, they ran the ball 40 times, only let him throw a little bit. Based on how he's calling, lets me know what confidence Andy Reid has him. Every one of these highlights, I can tell you a textbook reason why he went. Right here to Hunt. It was a hot read. So he throws it over the linebacker, gives him the one-on-one read. Right here, he has the wide receiver outside leverage on the DB. He's got to throw it high. Right here, he's got the linebacker breathing on him, so he's got to throw it his back shoulder. Every throw that he was make, he was textbook. Where do you want the football? Kelce going down the seam. A guy here, linebacker coming here. Oh, let me throw it back here. In the middle of the field, where he hits Kelce low, going in the end zone. All these things, no, that's not adrenaline. No, that's not. You can see. When he sees a guy open or he feels a guy's going to be open, he lets the ball go. So he has a great deal of confidence. I believe I told Nick this. He'll never play with the type of personnel that he's playing with now. And Andy Reid, I think this is the most talented team that he put. Even when they had McNabb and T.O., they didn't have four or five other guys with the type of speed. This is a 4x1 track team.
Everybody on the team, if you look at spark scores at the combine, that basically is just pure athleticism. That's who the Chiefs been drafting for 5 years. Chris Conley, their number three receiver. Go look at his vertical leap.
Yes.
Go look at his spark score. Yesterday, Pittsburgh tried to, we're not going to punt to Tyreek Hill. We're afraid of his speed. DeAnthony Thomas is the up back of a track star at Oregon. You know how hard it is to be a track star at Oregon? He gets the ball there, and he takes it 50 yards to open the game, not to the end zone, but to the red zone. Will Pat Mahomes make mistakes? Of course he will. But take the young quarterback out of it. How many quarterbacks have ever had more than 10 touchdowns in the first two games? Nobody.
None.
He just passed Peyton Manning's record. Peyton had 9 in the first 2 weeks. But that was the year Peyton had 7 in week one. So he got off to a crazy start. The Chiefs 4 years ago went all season long without a touchdown pass to a wide receiver. That happened. And that team wasn't terrible. It was Dinks and Dunks and Travis Kelce. And they already have 4 different wide receivers who caught touchdown passes. They got 7 guys that have caught touchdown passes. I know we talk a lot about will defenses catch up to young quarterbacks. What Chris pointed out, there'll be a regression, I'm sure, but it's hard to catch up to perfectly thrown, perfectly timed, sharp passes that, as you were talking about, they don't sail.
No.
I mean, he's throwing them on a line. This I don't know if it's the year of watching. Andy Reid deserves a lot of credit, the skill position guys. But Pat Mahomes, as in his third career start, because he started week 17 last year, looks as sharp and not gimmicks. It doesn't even feel like the RG3.
That's
year.
Important.
Right.
That's important. That's why you know it can be duplicated. It's pure NFL. Now, they did have a couple touch passes we're going to see on the speed sweep. I wouldn't say that part, that's a main part of pro football now. But that's the only thing that you can say, like, that maybe inflated his numbers or they tricked people. No, they're going to be able to do this. I mean, they remind me a lot of the 98 Vikings and the 2000 Vikings. 98 we know because Randall Cunningham and the record. But in 2000, Dante Culpepper took over after being a young quarterback like Mahomes, and we put up some numbers like they're putting up.
They reminded me of the 99 Rams as far as fat, like skill position guys everywhere. I mean, you obviously, the Vikings analogy is a great one, but and Kareem Hunt's not Marshall Faulk, but he's a guy who can catch out of the backfield.
Yeah, absolutely.
You got Isaac Bruce and Torrey Holt. I mean, we haven't even mentioned the name Sammy Watkins. If Sammy Watkins is just a nice additional complimentary piece,
yes.
The defense is, what did I said, Jenna, on? I said, if the Chiefs are going to win the game, they're going to have to score 38 points because I don't think they hold Pittsburgh under 35. Pittsburgh got 37, and the Chiefs won this football
game. And we didn't even mention Kelce.
No, who was dominant.
Yeah, he's a good player.
No, it says a lot. He not only played well, he beat a Steelers team where this franchise hadn't won there in so many years. So what that does for the confidence of a young player has to be huge.
And, oh, yeah.
I know. Go ahead. Well, I was going to say on Pittsburgh before we move on. Man, you got to keep in mind, they gave up, 42 points to the Jags in their playoff game? They now just gave up 42 to the Chiefs. Those are both games in Pittsburgh. They seemingly haven't recovered from the Shazier injury as far as that defense was good until Ryan Shazier got hurt last year. The last 5 weeks last year, it was bad. And the first couple weeks of this year, I know Cleveland only scored 21, but Pittsburgh's defense is a real concern right now.
Yeah, Joe Hayden was out, and that was a problem.
A huge problem.
All right, we got to take a break. Coming up, did a bogus call cost the Packers a win over the Vikings? That's next. This is First Things First. Back here, First Things First, former NFL head coach Chuck Pagano joins the show. Hey, Coach, good to have you back.
Thanks for having me. Great.
You came in, you went, whew, a lot of football yesterday.
A lot of football.
A lot to break down and discuss. Well, let's start with this one. Nothing says NFL football quite like a tie. We got one last week. We got one this week. Vikings, Packers. Yes, Aaron Rodgers played. Yes, this one was as good as advertised. After a questionable roughing the passer called on Clay Matthews nullified a Kirk Cousins interception, with less than 2 minutes to go, Cousins found Stephon Diggs to force overtime. Neither team could score. It was a bit of a heartbreak for the Vikings, at least. 29-29 was your final. Coach, let's start with the Packers. How should they feel after this tie, especially when we weren't sure what we were going to see from Aaron Rodgers?
Well, what a gritty performance, first of all, by Aaron Rodgers coming out. Didn't practice all week, and speculation that he wasn't going to play, but gritty performance. I mean, both teams are sitting there, had plenty of opportunities to win this game. You know, Packers out ahead. You get the call, 22 points scored by the Vikings in the fourth quarter. Great comeback. Unbelievable throw and catch to Thielen. The two-point was phenomenal. You know, they're both 1-0-1. It's really early in the season. So from a standing standpoint in the division, a lot of football left, obviously. We'll see, you know, how it comes into play late.
As far as the tie goes, these teams won't be – a tiebreaker won't come into play between them at the end of the year because one of them is going to win, we would imagine, the game in Minnesota. And so that will determine that if they finish with the same record. But as where the Packers are, man, Aaron Rodgers took a lot of punishment to not come away with a victory. Like, I mean, he got sacked 4 times, hit another 9. It seemed like he was constantly under duress. You could see he was not quite himself. Now, he still played very well, but as far as when you saw him running, he didn't look like the Aaron Rodgers we're used to. But, I mean, I will give a ton of credit to the Vikings offense. I expected the Vikings defense to look like the Vikings defense. But this was, you alluded to it during the highlights, see, This is why you go get Kirk Cousins. You go get Kirk Cousins so he can, you can be trailing double digits in the fourth quarter, which they were, and you can throw yourself back into the football game. It missed opportunity for Green Bay, and I understand the agita they have from the call on Clay Matthews when they thought the game was over. But Kirk Cousins played a hell of a football game, especially in the second half.
This was a good football game. And from two teams we expect later in the season to be there. You bring up the point, why do you go get Kirk Cousins? So when you get in a game like this, you need a guy. And you can tell the difference. Nothing against Sam Bradford, nothing against Case, but you can tell the level that Kirk brings, taking advantage of all the personnel, spreading the ball around, and being in a duel where you can actually forget about the running game. You can rely on the quarterback. That's not a luxury that the Vikings had before. People will talk about the call because that's what we do in the NFL. One call, did it change the arc of the game? Well, there was an interception, and it was late. But the referee, Tony Corrente, he called one earlier on Eric Kendricks in the game that it was the same type of call. We're going to have these every week. It's been a point of emphasis as far as the quarterback landing on him, what you do, is your head off to the side, was your weight on him. Yes, it was a controversial call, but to me, it wasn't the biggest thing in this game. It was a great matchup. NFC North ended in a tie. We haven't had ties in the NFL weeks one and week
that
two.
That new 10-minute overtime is affecting things. They brought that in last year. And remember, like that, if people, the overtime used to be 15 minutes, it's 10 minutes. I think that leads to a couple, one of these ties the first 2 weeks of the year.
You know, you brought up a good point about Aaron Rodgers and whether, not whether it was worth it, but whether he took too big of a beating to just walk away with a tie. Do you go back and look and think now and say, was it the right move? Was it not right move to not walk away with a win?
Well, I mean, regardless, I mean, you're gonna play that guy, and what a warrior he is. You hate it for a young kicker like Carlson to go out there and have opportunities and miss three field goals. They did have a chance to steal this game. They did have a chance to go 2-0 in the division, which is
huge.
a huge thing. Playoff implications, all those kind of things. But the game came down to the way it came down to, and again. And both teams had opportunities to win that thing. It didn't work out. So you go back, you got to watch the tape, make the corrections, and you got to move on.
And the reason why you don't regret it, Coach, is because the athlete doesn't get hurt. He didn't have a setback. I mean, you'd like to be able to win the game, and I believe in playing them, it helped bring balance to their offense. They ran the ball 24 times, and the reason why? Was because Aaron Rodgers was hurt. So I believe it will pay dividends. He didn't have a setback. He'll probably be ready for next week. And the philosophy, we need to balance this thing out, I believe, if they take that forward, it was benefiting them. And a half game is a half game. Because if he doesn't play, you lose.
Right.
You got no chance
to
win.
You lose, and you're down in that tiebreaker that I was bringing up earlier. So that part is important.
All right, Coach, we want to move on to a player that you coached with the Colts, cornerback Vontae Davis. He retired at halftime of the Bills game against the Chargers. Like, literally just walked away from the game during the game. Later put out a statement saying, quote, I shouldn't be out there anymore. Here's his teammate, Lorenzo Alexander, afterwards.
Never have seen it ever. Pop Warner, high school, college, pros, never heard of it, never seen it. And it's just completely disrespectful to his teammates.
All right, Coach, what did you make of this when you read about it, when you heard about it?
Disbelief. I was in shock, because I spent a lot of time with Vontae. We've shared a lot of great moments together. I've seen this guy play at the highest level. I'm not in that man's shoes. I don't
Coach,
know.
Coach, did you trade for him?
Yes, we did.
You traded for him, and also
back in 2012 from the Dolphins.
Yeah, you put him in the most, dependable situation. He was traveling around at his best when he made the Pro Bowl. You had him guarding the best receiver. So he's a guy that you had a lot of respect, a lot of confidence in, and a lot of responsibility.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And again, it's timing is everything. The timing on this one, obviously, is it's a head-scratcher. But this is a good kid. Again, I don't know where he's at physically, where he's at emotionally. You hate to see this for that organization. The Bills right now sitting at 0-2. They don't need the distraction. They didn't need this, obviously. But, I wish the best for this kid, moving forward. And if he's done with football, which he probably is at this point, I think that's obvious. That's a moot point. But it's hard.
It's that. Listen, we've seen guys retire mid-season often. We've seen some great players, you know, go in with another team, realize, I'm not as good as I thought I was. My body's not in the shape. It's the fact, if he had retired today, I don't think anyone, it's not a story. I mean, it's a story for the Bills, but it's a guy they gave $5 million to this offseason. His contract was guaranteed, played a couple games, realized I don't have it. Maybe they try to claw some of that money back. But it's the during the game that it makes this a huge story. Like, see, the Bills weren't going to win this game either way. But how does that message filter throughout the team in the second half? And how does that affect other guys on the team?
I mean, it doesn't filter at all. Because the one thing that we say, even the players and the coaches, we detach ourselves from the front office. It's like it's us. Like we're in this together. And if you depend on nothing else, you can depend on me as your brother. And it's just not something we've ever seen before. I've seen guys quit at training camp. I've seen guys come in at lunch, turn their room keys in, turn their playbook in and say, this is not for me. But we just don't see veteran players, guys who have made a lot of money off this business, because there's a way to do things. And I don't want a guy out there if his mind is not into it. So I do have a little bit of understanding. I don't want you out there for 30 another minutes. People will say, well, why didn't he wait till after the game? Well, someone can really get hurt. If you don't have your mind in the right place, if you're not sold out to what you need to do for your body and for your teammates, no, he shouldn't be out there. I would have thought that he got 30 minutes of football left in him, and then he can quit today.
Well, like, tell me if I'm wrong, even if he realizes I can't be out there, he can go, I would imagine, to the coaches and say, I can't play anymore today. Like, find me, whatever it is. I can't. But that's different than putting on your street clothes, showering, putting on your street clothes, and leaving during the football game.
And I'm just going to say this. And I'm Kevin Love and what he did this year. Totally different circumstance as far as him struggling with anxiety. Man, we don't know what people are going through. We think because we're sitting on our couch like, man, these guys got a glamorous job. Man, there's some ugly parts to football. And my last year playing in Miami, and I got my kidney, and my kidney was only working 20%. First pass they threw to me, Tyrone hit me, and I wish I could have quit. Later on that season, I dropped a touchdown for us to potentially send us into the playoffs against the Vikings in the Metrodome. Me, dropped an easy touchdown. Bam. Man, I wish I could have quit. Man, there ain't no easy way to get out of this business. But no. I do respect, though, I don't know where he was mentally. And for him to be a shutdown corner and for him to decide at halftime I don't want to be there, I'm going to try to respect his mental state also, even though I'm upset at the decision he made.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And I think he wakes up, obviously, this morning, and he's saying, you know what, doing just what you're saying, should have finished. Shouldn't let my brothers down. It's a brotherhood. You know that first and foremost in that locker room. I finish the game and then go about your business. But you're right. We don't know where he's at physically and where he's at mentally.
I always believe this, man, like a carpenter. I like to sign off on my work every day. Like, what'd you do? I did that. What did you say? I had 5 for 80. What did you do? Now, he can't sign off on that work. You can't sign off on that right there. Unless there was something really going on in his head that you can't sign off on that. And every day, that's what I try to pride myself on. I'm going to sign off on the work that I did. And that right there, that what he signed off on, is just not.
And for a player, for a player like you said, Pro Bowl player, a guy that was shut down corner his time, now this is his football epitaph. Like, this is what he will, because he wasn't a great enough player that he had a legacy, quote unquote, beforehand. If people bring up Vontae Davis and people remember him in 5 years, the guy that quit during the game. Right. That's brutal.
Well, unfortunately, you spend a lifetime building up this. Mm-hmm. And one decision.
Yes, sir.
Right.
Can tear it down in a heartbeat.
All right, Coach, stick around. More to discuss coming up. How is Blake Bortles able to out-duel Tom Brady? Next on First Things First. Back here at First Things First with Coach Pagano. Coach, one of the biggest surprises of the weekend, Jags and Pats, a rematch of last year's AFC title game, but in name only. While the Patriots got the best of Blake Bortles last year, it was quite a different story last night. Tom Brady couldn't get it done. Bortles throwing for 4 touchdowns, 377 yards in the Jaguars' win. Brady did add 234 yards and 2 touchdowns in the Patriots' loss. Here he is after the game.
Everyone needs to do a better job. I mean, that was not certainly our best effort. You know, I give them a lot of credit. They played good. You know, they make it tough on you on our offense, their defense. And, you know, we just could never string enough plays together.
All right, Coach, how did the Patriots lose this game?
That was a great win, obviously, for Jacksonville. And I think first and foremost, they got off to a fast start. You know, they jump out to a 21-3 lead at half. The quarterback, Bortles, we just talked about him. He played an outstanding football game. 4 touchdown passes, I think only 1 turnover, 377 yards. Made great decisions, got the ball spread around. He was phenomenal. The defense obviously did a great job holding Gronk, 2 catches, 15 yards. You know, and then, you know, all the criticism that they took in the AFC Championship game about getting conservative, you know, they kept their foot on the gas and they stayed aggressive, and that's why they came away with the win.
All credit in the world to the Jacksonville Jaguars, who, even though Vegas had this as a pick'em game, essentially, I thought the Pats were going to come in and remind everyone, we're the best team in the AFC. Jacksonville, despite all the great story of last year, was a 10-win team in, at the time, a weak division. I thought it was going to be a resetting of who's who in the AFC. And maybe it was a resetting, but in the opposite direction that I expected. The Jags out-patrioted the Patriots. The Jags did the score before half, get the ball, score right after half for a 10-point swing. The Jags looked at the Pats and said, what do you want to do? What do you do best? Oh, pass to Rob Gronkowski? We are taking that away and seeing if you can beat us with your B and C stuff. And the Patriots couldn't. The Jags also, most notably, as Coach makes a great point, learned from their mistakes last year against this team and said, if we lose, it's not going to be because we stopped being aggressive. They were aggressive up to and including up 11 with 2.5 minutes left, throwing the football as opposed to just playing the clock. Bortles played the best big game I've ever seen him play. Keelan Cole took the insult that he'd been getting league-wide or media-wide as far as Jags got no number one receiver, made the catch of the year and some huge plays. I mean, I cannot compliment Jacksonville highly enough about how they played start to finish in this football game.
Last week's conversation, Nick, you pointed out a couple times during the press conference, you were like, hey, Chris, New England said this is a big game. Do you? And I was like, I'll take note of it. And then on Thursday or Friday, Brady said it was a big game. Gronk said it was a big game, and Brady said it was a big game. So this is not as if New England was surprised by Jacksonville. They know what's going on in Duval County. They realize their personnel, and they have a lot of respect for them. And for them to do that, after you know New England had a great deal of focus on them, to me, that's a credit to Jacksonville and something they should be able to move on going forward. But their coaching staff being aggressive in their play calling, their ability to be able to throw the ball on first down. 19 times on first down, they decided to throw almost 60% of the time, and 13 times Bortles. Because it's something to have a game plan, Coach, but guys don't execute it. Blake was able to get them and get the ball to the offensive weapon to be able to take advantage. Two things about New England's defense that you should know. Logan Ryan, the corner, he can be had. Their linebackers in man-to-man have never been good. So if you play all that man-to-man and you can get the ball to your running backs or to your tight ends to take advantage of their lack of coverage skill at their linebacker position, that is the recipe to be able to try to beat New England.
Last time these two teams played, the one knock on Jacksonville was that they weren't aggressive, that they came out in the second half and they kind of relied on that lead they had, and that was the end of it. And Doug Marrone heard about this all offseason long. How much of that, as a player or as a coach, sort of sticks in you? Like, you always remember the last time you played a team, and they can talk all week and game plan all offseason, but you remember who they were, who you thought they were the last time you played. Does that factor in at all to what the Patriots thought the Jags were going to do?
No doubt about it, because you're going to look at everything that you did in the season in 2017, and you're going to make the corrections, and you're going to say, okay, look, we're one of the top teams in the AFC. They got a great roster. They're playing a physical brand of football. You know, with Tom Coughlin there and Doug Marrone, got great respect for both of those coaches. Doug's doing a great job, but they out-physicaled him in the trenches. We always say, hey, you got to be able to run the football and stop the run to win in the National Football League. And I know it's becoming a passing league, and I know people are in three wides like 65, almost 70% of the time now, but Yeldon, 5.8 per carry. I think they held New England to 3.4 yards per carry. And I know they got behind a little bit, and they had to throw to catch up, and they probably got away from the run game. But this is a physical, tough, athletic, fast football team that, like you said, Bortles, he's playing for all the stuff he's been through.
Yes.
And all the junk he's taken care of. I mean, the criticism that he's taken over the last 4 or 5 years, this guy's playing lights out.
And the Pats game plan was clearly did not change with the news Fournette was not going to play. They played the Jags as if Fournette was back there and they thought Fournette was going to get 30 carries. Like, right? They were jamming the box almost the entire game, daring Blake Bortles to beat him, and the Jags pivoted intelligently. One other note for the Patriots. You mentioned slow linebackers. Logan Ryan can be had. Week one, that D-line in the front looked very good. They were playing one of, if not the worst offensive line in football in Houston. Week two, they're playing a Jacksonville team that, by the way, during the game lost their left tackle. But they still have Andrew Norwell, their big free agent acquisition. That offensive line is one of the strengths of their team. And Bortles was clean the whole game. New England could not even pretend to fabricate a pass rush. That now we're talking about at least moderate concerns for New England defensively at all three levels. Can they get a pass rush? Do they have speed at linebacking core? And do they have a corner other than Stephon Gilmore that you actually believe in? Those are all things to watch.
So many questions.
Let's not write them off.
So many questions.
No, we've seen these guys in this predicament.
This is the month to play.
But let's not write off the Pats just yet.
No doubt.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. And catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.